Welcome in Rose City to Soccer Made in Portland. Ryan Clark here with Chris Reifer. Not a terribly busy week in the land of PTFC. Some Portland Thorns competing in the She Believes Cup final earlier this week. A thriller that went into penalties. The USA emerging victorious. But really, only thing major to talk about this week is the Portland Timbers, who played their fun little roller coaster game once again on Saturday, go down 3-0 at Sporting KC. It seemed like it was about to be 4-0, but a missed penalty.
Really shift. Badly missed penalty.
Really badly missed.
Let's give Willie Agata, whatever the opposite of flowers is, let's give those to Willie Agata for that penalty. That was one of the worst I've seen in quite a while.
Yeah, maybe a clump of dirt. Dirt would be the
and
thing
he may have
given
hit a clump of dirt before hitting the ball. Because, I mean, that was like when you know, once in a while, if you watch enough golf, you see a pro just like flub one like you and I would.
Yeah.
That was like that. That was the equivalent of like a professional golfer just totally shanking one and, you know, making us normies feel better about ourselves. That was really got his penalty to go 4-0. And I agree. Would have.
Slam the door.
Doubt be, yeah. Away about the result of the game.
But that moment sort of shifted the game weirdly on its axis, right? The Timbers respond in the second half, come back and tie the game 3-3 in the end. Phil Neville being more upfront and critical of players than I believe I've ever seen Gio over there. Yeah. Gio was pointed in his criticisms, I think, but I don't think it reached the sort of level in, I think, credit to Phil Neville that it has, where there's a sort of underlying like accountability and values sort of approach to things. Right now, whether that actually translates to results on the field, that remains to be seen. But I do think that's noteworthy coming out of that game, his willingness to put guys on the bench who, frankly, were not playing up to the standard. You think about, you know, Juan Mosquera and Santiago Moreno not playing up to the level. You know, those two guys are just a couple examples. Obviously, they're not the only ones that created issues for the Timbers, but What are your thoughts just on the up and down nature of that game, and then maybe Neville's sort of response to this pretty rough stretch?
So I'll start with Neville's response, because I actually think his comments that he made after the game were a progression of a theme that we've heard from him over the course of the last couple of weeks. I think we heard similar, but, you know, not as direct and not as forceful things after the Philly game. I think we heard similar and close to as forceful things after the Vancouver game. And we heard the same after Sporting Kansas City. You know, and they were sort of all along the lines of, you know, these guys, you know, weren't prepared, weren't sort of, you know, playing at, as you put it, at the standard of what you would require for a game like this. And I don't disagree with you that that's, you know, a valid comment and is a good, you know, is a thing that is fair to be calling out after these performances, because I think you can see it, right? I don't disagree with him at all. But there's only so many times that a coach can say that before somebody asks the question of whose job is it to prepare these guys for these games? And so like that commentary at some point ends up being a bit of a boomerang for a coach. Because
it can only go so far for so long, right? Because obviously it's, and I think Neville knows this too, that it's a collective effort to suck in the way that the Timbers had sucked for 3.5 games. So.
Yeah. And look, I mean, if they are consistently not coming out and performing at the level that you would expect, like, that's not a one-off. That's not something that you can just sort of point to the locker room and say, ah, those guys. I mean, at some point, like, that's literally the coach's job to prepare these guys to come out and perform at a level that'll win games. And I think he rightly has pointed out that there have been stretches, I emphasize stretches, in each of the last three games in which the Timbers have not only been at that level, but frankly haven't been close to it. And like, we're at the point, I don't think he can say that again. Because if he says that again, That only leads to the obvious next question, which is, why aren't these guys coming out and performing every week at that level?
Yeah, and the interesting only answer
is because Phil Neville's not preparing them.
Right, and the interesting thing about it, too, is the way that I think Neville and to a greater extent, Ned Grabovoy in the front office have talked about this roster, right? You know, at Neville's introductory press conference and even into the early portions of the season, you know, they've talked about the roster being closer than people think, or, you know, the better than your record thing, which we've brought up plenty of times before. But
tradition like no other.
Yeah, it's a tradition unlike any other, same as it ever was, as some Timbers fans might say. This is sort of the thesis for the opposite, right? And this is an interesting, you know, position to take after those sort of discussions, right? The idea that, you know, the roster is better than its record and everything else, but I don't know. I look, the Jonathan Rodriguez thing was great, and I think that, you know, after some time and maybe playing a different position, and we can talk about that as the podcast rolls on here. I think that he will do well and be one of their best players and score a lot of goals. But it was definitely not a fix-all, for sure. I don't think they tried to frame it that way necessarily. But they're definitely not that move away from being a good and contending team, right? They haven't put together two good halves all season. And people can harp on, oh, guys, come on. You're so negative on this podcast. You're so, all you do is
1.1 points per game, Brotato.
there it is. That's the drinking.
I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what you want me to say.
That's the drinking game for this podcast, is right for saying 1.1 points
like
per game.
If the Timbers are at 1.7 points per game and we're dragging them, like, I get it.
Sure.
Maybe we need to touch grass
a little bit.
Yeah,
maybe we need to reel it
come
in.
Come on.
It's been rough. Look, not being able to put together two good halves this season. You look at every game, there was even in the Colorado game, which was wild and fun, and the first half was great, there was a stinker and there was a good half. Or the most recent game, stinker, real stinker for the first half, just totally flat, like Houston before Gio got fired last year levels of incompetence.
Yep, that's right.
And then second half was a turnaround. It wasn't perfect. They were a terrible penalty away from it being 4-0, as we said. But
and SKC was awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah, but credit to them for making the adjustments. SKC was absolutely leaving the door open.
SKC was as bad in that second half as the Timbers were in the first.
Yeah, definitely.
Like just watch the defending on the Timbers goals. It's if the Timbers defended like that, we would be on here absolutely roasting them.
Oh, for sure. And the interesting thing, too, that came out of that game is the potential for sort of shifting the approach in the way of the attacking players in their positions. I think Mora is a guy that is, you know, given that he's fully healthy now and is a solid and consistent contributor, more than solid in a lot of ways. I do think that you have to start talking about putting Jonathan Rodriguez on the wing and having Mora at more of a traditional striker position. I'm wondering, just, you know, watching that and seeing how they sort of had success in that area, what you think about that?
I'm going to come back to that in just a moment. I do want to come back to that because I think it's a good talking point. But I have a hot take before we get to that. And it's a hot take that I got to tell you, Ned Grabovoy. If he listens to this podcast, probably doesn't. If he listens to this podcast, Ned, you are going to love this. Like, this is your moment. So here it is. Here's my hot take. I think this Timbers roster is better than its record.
There it is.
Having now watched this Timbers team, however many games they've played this year, I actually think there's quite a bit of talent on this roster. I think the attack is deeper maybe than it's ever been. And more talented than it's ever been. I think Antony, I agree with Phil Neville's comments over the weekend that Antony is legit. I think he's got some weaknesses in his game, but I mean, that's to be expected at his age, but he has some, also some real strengths.
Yeah, like he's crazy fast and he finishes well, but there are moments where the ball gets a little chewed up in his feet. Yep. Like he's and super young too. That's the other thing. Like he,
all totally
I agree with you. Like he has star potential. He's just a little raw and certain.
I think Evander can be when he's playing well and he's been inconsistent, but when he's playing well is legit. I think Santi Moreno, when he's playing well, when he's engaged, is really good. I think Jonah Rodriguez is really good. I think Felipe Mora is, I mean, a real quality striker. I think they have more talent, especially at center back, than they've had in a long time. I think Juan Mosquera is tempestuous, but extremely talented. I think there are questions about how to arrange the central midfield, but among the three of Diego Chara and Christian Paredes and Eric Williamson, it's not a bad unit. And David Ayala, I'm frankly glad. I think it's bit the Timbers at times, but I'm glad that Neville has been as proactive in getting him minutes as he has been, because like I'm on the train for Ayala. I think he has some tools that if you can get him consistent time and get him developed, can be major weapons.
Yeah, he actually did what we talked about before and potentially killing the sacred cow, right? He brought Diego Char off the bench.
Take some guts, and those are the guts that are required at times to develop young players. Which is all to say, I look at this roster, and this ain't a 1.1 per point per game roster. Like, these ain't the San Jose Earthquakes, right? And so I think that this roster actually is better than its record. I think there were questions about that the last couple of years. I think that was maybe a little bit of a questionable statement. I think there were bigger flaws with those rosters. But this roster is better than a 1.1 point per game.
Yeah, especially with Bravo back too, is another piece when we're talking
for
about.
For sure. But also like injuries happen. And that's not to say that the roster is perfect. Yes, they could use additional fullback depth. Yeah, I think they probably need a little bit more central midfield depth. But like that, I mean, you could do that for every MLS team. And I think that hot take for me really shifts the focus to Neville, because it's his job to take a roster that's better than 1.1 points per game and get better than 1.1 points per game out of them.
Yeah. And to prove himself, frankly, as a coach, because, you know, we've had these conversations and, you know, people in certain positions might think there's some sort of like bias going on here, right? That there's some sort of like anti-Neville crusade that exists.
The guy said that the best thing on his resume is getting sixth in the East with Miami in 2021.
Yeah, and but this is part of the conversation, right? Is the idea that, you know, he has yet to prove himself as a coach in MLS.
Yeah.
Straight up. And so this is sort of one of those moments, right, where you're like, okay, like, you know, we've seen it in flashes, you know, his ability to motivate the group.
Or have we just seen the talent flashes?
Or have,
and the inability to translate that talent consistently into results and performances.
Yeah, then that's what I was going to say, is like what is coming through right now between those two things is the big question.
Yeah. And so I think that's it. I mean, I think the pressure now is squarely on Neville, because I don't think he can come to another press conference after, you know, if this weekend against LAFC goes pear-shaped again. I don't think he can come to another press conference and say that was an unacceptable performance and not just beg the obvious question, right? I don't think he can have another performance in which the Timbers look pretty good at times and like they've got plenty of capability to compete with good teams, and then periods in which they're getting overrun. That can't keep happening. And if it does, it's going to lead to questions. And yeah, you're right. Like it's not like he has a lengthy resume to fall back on to be like, look, you know, I mean, it's kind of like I was reading there were some NBA types who did sort of like a power rankings of NBA coaches. And like 29 and 30 in these two rankings were Chauncey Billups and Greg Popovich, but in like reverse order, like one had 129, the other had the other 30, you know, 130. And so and the person who had Popovich 29 was basically just like, Greg Popovich has 6 titles, so he's not last. I mean, Neville's kind of in Chauncey Billups' position there, right? It's not like he's walking in here with 6 titles. And he has sort of the resume to be able to point to be like, yeah, it's not been what great so far, but like, I've got the chops to make this better.
Yeah. And the two things that they've hung their hat on and that he's hung his hat on, obviously the name recognition and the association with Manchester United and David Beckham. Yeah. I don't care about that either, but that's part of the framing. The other piece being the England women, which they had success, but they were obviously more successful after he left. That, and this is a discussion we have had ad nauseum before, but it is part of the larger picture in terms of like, you know, can he do it successfully at this level? Yeah. Can the staff do it in general? It's not obviously just Neville. It's a great deal of carryover from Gio's staff that is in this area right now. So who knows? Yes.
Yeah. So and that's not at all to say that Phil Neville will be a failure as the Timbers coach. There is lots of season left. There is lots of opportunity left for him to get the team to the place where it should be and where it needs to be. But the longer that they hang around at 1.1 points per game, or even similarly unimpressive, spots on the table, I think the more he's going to face these kinds of questions. And so I think he has used up his, you know, that was an unacceptable performance lines. Like, those are gone now. And now it's going to be about him showing that he can get acceptable performances out of this team.
So Jonah on the wing, then back to that point. And I think
that was a divergence into, you know,
it's an important discussion. I'm glad we had it.
To be named later. Yeah. I think this is an important club for the Timbers to have in the bag. I'm not yet convinced that it's going to be the regular club for them to pull out, or the most, you know, the one that they pull out the most. But I think of the little bit of it that we've seen, clearly there's something that can work there. And it totally worked against SKC. In the first half, the Wiz were pretty organized, and they made it more challenging for the Timbers to sort of complete these actions, because frankly they were just pretty compact. Moving Rodriguez out to the wing in the second half, I thought totally stretched them laterally. It opened a lot of gaps, and it really created space for folks like Felipe Mora to find, you know, space in which to find good spots. That's what the first penalty came out of. Mora just got position because there were gaping gaps between SKC's and in SKC's central defense. He got a good spot, and then, you know, the SKC player whose name I'm blanking on now foolishly came through him and fouled him. But that wouldn't have happened if Mora hadn't been able to find that good spot, and he wouldn't have been able to find that good spot if they weren't stretched. And I think we sort of saw that over the course of the second half. And so I think Mora being a real threat on the backside there, because the Timbers were still primarily building down the right, if I'm remembering the stats right. But Mora was really dangerous sort of coming in on the backside on the left. And that was just sort of tore SKC apart. I think that is a tool the Timbers want to have and they need to have. And I think we will see it again. I think there are even spots where it probably makes sense to start. I also think it sort of puts somebody like Santiago Moreno on notice, right? Because if he's not performing consistently, there is another option there.
Yeah, and he would be the odd man out in that situation. Yeah. Like they like what they've seen from Anthony so much that I don't think he would be the one that would be ceding that position.
Yeah, and you know, I've said before that I really believe the Timbers have quite a few playmakers. They have a lot of people who can make the final pass. What they've been missing at times are folks who are a little bit more direct, and I don't mind at all. In the Timbers 4-2-3-1, sometimes it looks like a 4-3-3, and I think it would look more like a 4-3-3 in this setup. Having those wide, those wingers be more like wide forwards, and that's more of what it looks like when you've got Jonah on the left, Antony on the right, and Mora in the middle. That's going to shape more like a 4-3-3. I don't mind doing that and giving sort of Evander true freedom to kind of run underneath and you know, to pull the strings, so to speak, and to let that be sort of the way the Timbers shape up. I don't know if that's going to be their best set forever. I think, frankly, you might want to have Rodriguez closer to goal with some regularity, because I think he's demonstrated that he can be dangerous in that position. But I think this is a really important tool for them to have, to be able to A, get Felipe Mora on the field, because I think he's a good player, and B, to have this as something that they can do either from the start or if they're looking for a goal in a game. So, you know, I think that was really positive. I think that helped change the game. And you know, I think it's something to be excited about going forward. But I'm not at the point where I'm saying that is the starting 11 from here on out. It might be the starting 11 this next week. But that is the, you know, I'm not at the point where I'm saying that's going to be the starting 11 for the rest of the season by any means. And I think it's something to watch going forward, to see whether that's going to be kind of their secondary set, or whether the success and the personnel are going to come together in that way that it becomes their primary set. We'll see.
Yeah. And I believe, if I'm not misremembering, that Neville mentioned either in his post game press conference or at some point along the way that they brought Jonah in to be a striker. And so that's obviously, I would imagine, their preference for him. But, you know, if push comes to shove, maybe they start to think a little more about that as an option. But, you know, the game's ahead. You got two against LAFC and one against Columbus, the two finalists. So that's going
to
be
Columbus, who just went down to Tigres and got a draw and ones in penalties to advance in CCL. That, I mean, that's going to Tigres and getting that result is as impressive a result as an MLS team has had in CCC. With due respect to Seattle winning it, what was it, 2 years ago, which was a obviously really quality accomplishment, going to one of the Gigantes on the road, getting a result, that's quality.
Inter Miami didn't do that.
They did not. they got absolutely crushed by Ayatos last night, 3-0 after losing 2-1. 5-1 on aggregate. Jiminy Christmas. You know, warning shots for Inter Miami. But I mean, that is, that just goes to show, because Tigres is on that level with Monterrey in terms of spend and in terms of sort of, you know, overall quality of club. It goes to show A, how hard it is. Because that Inter Miami team, especially the one that was put on the field last night, pretty good. I mean, if you've heard of the guys,
they got a couple of guys.
Yeah, they got a couple guys who can play. Leo Messi's got a future in this league. Yeah. Let me tell you.
Yeah, he does.
But yeah, I mean, with all the talent that they have, that they still got pumped.
Yeah.
And that goes to show the quality that Columbus have, and it looks like Cucho is back in the team. This is all a very long way of saying, I think Columbus is freaking legit. And I think that's going to be a really challenging game. The one, I can't remember what the schedule for the CCC, the CONCA Champions semifinals is, but it might be around when the Timbers are going to Columbus. And that could be a lifeline for the Timbers.
Yeah, because
a fully
rested,
fully informed, fully focused Columbus Crew team would be a mountain to climb.
For sure. And so that CONCA Champions game is 3 days after the Timbers are set to play Columbus.
That is worth giving thanks for.
Yeah. Yeah. Give thanks on 420, which is the holiday that the Timbers will be playing.
Blazing a trail all the way to Columbus to try to get some points.
Try to get some points out of a team that might be saving its big guns for the CONCA Champions. So we'll
now they got to play Rayados. Bertirame, by the way, who has been much discussed on this podcast, had a doozy last night to basically end the suspense.
You can see why the Timbers were ready to back up the Brinks truck for that guy.
good player.
Maybe they're still thinking about that.
Who knows? Vasquez, by the way, also pretty good player. That Monterrey team is really, really, really good. Let's make no bones about that. But that the way they undressed Miami is. Goes to show how good you have to be.
Yeah, they're the Liga MX team that I've probably watched the most of over the last couple of years, not just because of Leagues Cup and everything with the Timbers, but they're fun to watch in general. Every time they're on, there's something to see.
Bertirame isn't an in-pin starter for them, and that's not because he's bad.
Yeah, they're a really freaking good team. They're just
that stacked.
Yeah.
So, big task in front of Columbus. I think they are MLS's best representative to take on that task.
Yeah.
I would still favor, I think, Monterrey in that series. But there's no other MLS team that I think would even have a fighting chance.
Yeah. And so that's the task ahead of the Timbers is to face that Columbus team, however they shape up in that one. And then those two against LAFC, neither of which are going to be easy. One on the road, one at home. The first one's at home.
Coming off a big El Tráfico win.
Yes.
A little bit of a contested penalty in that one that gave them the win. But and still feels like an LAFC team that's kind of in third gear. But frankly, they were kind of in third gear a lot of last year, too. Mm-hmm. Especially in the second half of the season after their own CONCA Champions disappointment. In the final, that frankly wasn't a very good LAFC team, and they kind of felt like they were MLS Cup participants by default because the bottom basically just fell out of the entire Western Conference last year.
Yeah. And on top of that, that stretch for them was rough, and they publicly pointed to the compression of the schedule as a big reason why. So.
Yeah. I think they kind of felt like their legs fell off after Champions League. I don't think they can use that excuse this year. They haven't been in Champions League competition now for some weeks. And frankly, they still feel like they're stuck in third gear. But in terms of another team that whose roster is better than its record, and I think they're at 1.4 or 1.5 points per game, so let's not throw the 1.1 point per game dirt on them, but the difference is 2 points right now, it's not like we're talking about leagues of difference in terms of table position. But look, that is very much a team that I think everybody in the league would agree is a better roster than its record. If they are getting on track, and if that win against the Galaxy, who have been phenomenal so far, is the thing that is a sign that LAFC is starting to get on track, these are going to be two very challenging games for the Timbers against LAFC as well. And so all three could be pretty, pretty complicated for Phil Neville and his crew, such that, if you have stretches like they've had against SKC and Vancouver, against teams like LAFC and Columbus, you ain't coming back, right? There's no miracle, 3-3 draw to pull out of your tukus against the crew, right? And so they've, I know I've been dragged a little bit for the dumb colloquialisms about ebbs and tsunamis, but if you have a tsunami against one of these teams, you're done. Finished. Out to sea.
Yeah. Yeah, you're toast. The Thorns have been off for a couple of weeks now, since their last game at least. International break and the opportunity for a lot of the primary contributors to go and participate in She Believes. So it won't quite be a full strength look in all likelihood for the Thorns against the North Carolina Courage on Saturday, but they're back in action. They're on the road at Wake Med in North Carolina. Gotta bounce back in their own way, right? I mean, that we will obviously break that down more in detail next week, but just looking ahead to that.
Going to a place that's been a house of horrors for the Thorns over the years. Cary, North Carolina has not been kind to the Portland Thorns.
It's not an easy place to get to, but to be completely fair, but
it is. Yeah. I mean, you know, but this is a place where they've struggled, turned into a track meet when they were there last year. That seems to be a problem again this year. It's kind of like with Phil Neville, I think this is a pretty critical game for Mike Norris. Yes, there were the absences over the international break, but he also has to bring his team together and demonstrate that they can win games. Because, I mean, this is a roster that is a lot better than 0.33 points per game, and it's a lot better than 0.25 points per game if they lose this weekend. I'm just doing mental math here, folks. This is how it's done.
Yeah, well, four games into the year, yeah, really, doing the averages.
I know my like divisibles of 1/3 and 1/4.
Good job.
Let there be no question about that. But you know, this is a team that's a lot better than that. And yeah. I think if the performance is lacking this weekend, as it has been in significant respects the last few, and if they don't get results, I think we're going to start. I mean, not start, but we're very much going to be asking the same questions about Mike Norris as we're starting to ask about Phil Neville. I think the danger for Norris is that we don't really know if he has ownership that's likely to be as patient as Merritt Paulson is with Neville.
Yeah. Yeah. You would think that even if things go pretty south for the Timbers, that Neville has a longer leash in that sort of situation. Norris has been there for a couple of years anyway, but yeah.
And these owners didn't pick Mike Norris, right? They adopted him. And so in some respects, Paulson's fate and reputation is tied up in Neville, right? Because he picked him. And so if Phil Neville comes in and stinks, that's going to reflect on Merritt Paulson.
Yeah.
If Mike Norris stinks with the Thorns, that doesn't really reflect on the Bethals. If anything, the Bethals are going to be like, yeah, we came in, there were things that weren't up to our standard, we made changes.
Yeah.
And so like that, this is why everybody always talks about being concerned about working for somebody who didn't hire them, because there's just you have a shorter leash. I think there are going to start to be questions about how long the leash is if the Thorns come out and again put in a subpar and substandard performance and get beat in a tough place against a team. You know, North Carolina is off to a good start. No huge surprise, but they're there.
Everything else aside, we'll get more in depth into the nuts and bolts of that game after the fact. Everything else aside, I'll come out as an advocate, which is a rarity on this podcast. Start Hina Sugita.
Yeah, gotta start Hina.
Put her in the starting lineup. Yeah. That's all. That's my advocacy for this week as the vice chair of the Hina Hive, as led by the Associated Press is Annie Peterson. I will come out strongly in favor of such items. And I know there are others around coverage of the Thorns that agree with that sentiment, Fook Nguyen, and others who have said similar things. But I look forward to catching that game, seeing how the Timbers do against LAFC this weekend, both of those games on Saturday. But we will catch you next week, chat both of those games, and look into the future for PTFC. So for Chris Reifer, I'm Ryan Clark. Thank you for joining us. Like, subscribe, follow us on Twitter. You know the handles. We'll catch you next week.